Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to On the Edge. Brains, here is the spot, right here. This is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome, yummies. How y'all doing? We are going to be weaving the landscape between blacks and browns and throwing in some immigration with my guest today, Estela de los Rios. She is the director of the Center of Social Advocacy, CSA, San Diego County. That's a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to eradicating fair housing discrimination through the Fair Housing Act initiative. Also, they support their clients with grassroots organizing and information against discrimination, and they conduct those investigations. Other issues that CSA addresses includes hate crime prevention, civil rights of first-generation immigrants, human trafficking, youth education, and voter education. And all of these services that they provide are at no cost to the client. Brains, please help me welcome to the Edge my guest today, Estela de los Rios. Hola, amiga. ¿Cómo está?
Hello. Hello, April. Thank you so much for inviting me to your show. Thank you.
Oh, yes, my pleasure. I'm excited to. I always love to have a mover and a shaker on the show. So I want to jump right in, and I want my brains to get a personal introduction to who you are based off some of the work that you've done. How did you get involved in the movement of civil rights, organizing, and standing up for people that are overlooked and underserved?
Thank you. And, yes, this is my passion. This is my life. As you mentioned, April, I grew up during the civil rights movement in the era where Dr. Martin Luther King, and I read about Rosa Parks, and with so much going on in the 70s, going to school and learning about social justice, I said to myself, this is an area that I firmly believe in, respect, dignity, and human rights for all people, regardless of racial background, language, national origin, religion, sexual orientation, gender, age, disability, whatever that is, you deserve, everyone deserves respect and dignity and has the right to believe in what they would like to advocate for themselves and for others. So it's been a long journey, probably approximately maybe 30 years. I've been nationally invited to speak on immigration, involved in human trafficking as well. Anything, any issue to do with discrimination, especially in diverse communities, I like to be there because I believe that everyone plays an important role, especially with underrepresented and underserved communities, April.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, we really appreciate foot soldiers, people that are out there that are willing to stand up and, you know, take a cause and hold it, you know, by the reins and ride it through, you know, because it's not easy. And a lot of times we get a lot of backlash for the things that we say, the things that we do, but it's the truth as we know it. So speaking of truth, I want to talk a little bit about culturally. There are still some obvious cultural and racial divides, you know, because I keep it real with my brains here on the edge, between our two cultures, between Hispanics and African Americans or blacks. And it's very confusing to me because we're both indigenous tribal people. We've both been rejected and subjected historically to discrimination and racial bias when it comes to the legal system. How do we begin to blend, you know, working and weaving, interconnecting both of our cultures and bringing the synergy against those divides to handle some of these issues? Because it's on and popping at the White House.
That's right. And April, thank you. And your historical is very true. I want to start for the listeners out there. The Fair Housing Act was signed into law in April 1968. Following the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. And the reason I bring this up is because we're in all this together, everyone. This is a civil rights movement, not just for one, but for everyone, particularly black and brown communities. We have to work together. Black and Latinos have the same issues. I always say it to my brothers and sisters, we have more in common than in differences, and we have to work towards that voice, to unite our voices and mobilize what we have to in front of us. As you mentioned, right now is a perfect example. There's too much going on where
it's too much going on, okay?
Yeah, there is. And we have to work together. In fact, I want to share with everyone, you know, I used to tell myself, well, why should I work with the black community? You know, I like to share, in 2007, I went to a National Council of La Raza in Miami, Florida, where we were having a national conversation about Latinos and the vote and so forth. And who do I encounter? Reverend Al Sharpton, who was up there speaking about immigration. And I looked at him and I said, oh, my goodness. You know, he is telling the raw truth. This was not about immigration, folks. This is about racism. And right there immediately, I began to think in my own mind, I have to work and be the model and the role model that us Latinos have to unite and work with our black and our African leaders, because, as I mentioned again, we have too much in common historically, culturally. You know, we have all these challenges in front of us, but I like to say it took me as a woman of color, as a Latina, more sacrifices to get where I'm at, more challenges to get where I'm at, but I'm here and we're here, and our Black and Brown Coalition is beautiful. It's a leadership and advocacy that we must continue to have in our communities, not on only on a local level, but on a state level and a national level. And I
on
am
an international
so
level, because the struggle is real, and I'm feeling you are, again, one of the founding members to the National Action Network here in San Diego that was founded by the Reverend Al Sharpton, who's been on the forefront of civil rights and the civil rights movement since, you know, the 60s, since the day of King. And so, again, for a woman of color to pick up the gauntlet and run with this and bridge that gap between the blacks and the browns, I think is very courageous, and I hold a lot of respect for you for that, because, again, you know, it's a dialogue, it's a conversation. That's what we do here on The Edge, and that's what you do, you know, with CSA, is you have that conversation. We want to talk a little bit about human trafficking, because that is off the chain too. I heard that that is raking in more money than the gun trade and the dope trade. Is trafficking human beings. Now, you know, in Los Angeles, I did another wonderful interview with Dr. Manns. I'd like for you to meet her, Dr. Deborah Manns. She's the boss. She is doing human trafficking and relating to that as it is with these young prostitutes and these gang members. But you're talking about it from a different perspective, that actually that are being brought over from other countries for labor as well as the sex trade. Can you tell me a little bit about the work that you do with them?
Yes, thank you. Labor trafficking. Labor trafficking is also under the realm of human trafficking, and not so much as spoken about it, because it's not as sexy as sex trafficking. And by that I mean, I'm not minimizing the importance of sex trafficking.
Oh, yeah, I get you. Gotcha.
Everything is important. What is important, though, is to know that there is labor trafficking here in San Diego, CSA San Diego County, and Dr. Sheldon Jang in 2012. Did a national study to show that there's bonded labor and forced labor and child labor here in San Diego County. We found that 33% of our workers in our region, from North County to East County to South Bay and to the border, we have potential victims of labor trafficking. And what does that mean in our food services and our agricultural areas? There has been some form of coercion, some form of servitude, involuntary servitude, bondage, and slavery. When they don't pay you for a service, that is slavery, in my words, in my mind. You know, we're talking about 2000, the year 2012, and now, even now, labor trafficking. We just had one labor trafficking survivor go to Washington, D.C. yesterday. No, not yesterday. Excuse me. I'm getting my days. Not yesterday. Last year, to advocate for labor trafficking. And why? Because we need to come out of the shadows, exposing the myths and the truth about labor trafficking. And not whether you're documented or undocumented, everyone has rights. Slavery is alive and well, and this is what we call human slavery, whether it's sex trafficking or labor trafficking. When you are working and you do not get paid and you coerce and you're threatened with your life, that is slavery. So, yes,
wow.
We are working on this issue here in San Diego County for the past 15 years. I believe that this is under the realm of human rights again. It's a civil right. No one should be a victim to human trafficking, and there is a lot being worked on here regionally with task force, and thank you, April, because this is an issue. The top three crimes in our country, listen carefully, listeners, is I used to
brains,
think drugs.
Brains.
Yeah,
brains.
It's not drugs, not drugs. Number one is the smuggling of arms. Number two, the smuggling of people, and number three, the smuggling of drugs. And why? Because you
Shut
cannot move
door.
People or drugs without arms, okay? Because you need
right.
those weapons to
right.
to threaten, to coerce. And unfortunately, if this is organized
yeah,
crime
absolutely.
Locally,
and it's big
nationally,
deal.
Yeah.
Now,
and
are these now the
too.
People that when these people are captured on the other side? These I don't know. They used to be called coyotes or smugglers or just downright pimps. But when, are
right.
they prosecuted on a federal level for human trafficking?
Yes, they
Is there
are.
Any prosecution ever done?
Yes, they are prosecuted, and you brought up a good point there. You know, they used to be coyotes, smugglers, but now there's a new trend. The coyotes are bringing families over, and they're selling them to human traffickers, so they make double
mm-hmm.
the money. From
right.
the country that they're being smuggled to a trafficker, and then the trafficker in return sells these people, bodies, organs, children. You know, it's a horrific issue, but it's
I know,
the truth.
And people don't even discuss the part of the organs. You know that brains.
Right.
We've had this conversation before. They are human trafficking for organs, for body parts. It's crazy. If you got enough money, you can get anything that you want. Let me ask you a question with regards to immigration. You know, we're walking a real fine line here, and I want to hear the pros and cons when it comes to making California a sanctuary state. That's a big responsibility. We are very close to Mexico. We love our immigrant brothers and sisters. I don't want anybody deported. I want everybody to come over and make a living wage and to pay their taxes and do what they're supposed to do. But to take the whole state and risk federal funding, other grants and programs that we may be qualified to for the sanctity of making this a safe haven for people that have not gained legal citizenship. What would you say to those individuals, Estella?
Okay, so you brought up a very good point, and I want to bring up my dear friend, Javier Becerra, who is now the Attorney General, who, if many out there don't know, he served as a member of Congress in Washington, D.C., okay? So he is very, very familiar with federal laws and state laws, now serving as our Attorney General in California. So now California Senator Kevin De Leon, he introduced that California be a sanctuary state, not city, state.
Right.
And why? This is a national debate, of course. Everyone knows this is a rhetoric right now. He introduced Senate Bill 54 that right now has passed, but it's pending. You know how those amended laws and bills work. This bill would prevent law enforcement officers to go out and notify ICE, any person, for their legal papers to be documented, undocumented, which I may remind people and folks, Texas already passed this. Texas is already passed this. So my mother asked me the other day, she said, can you explain to me what that means? Because I don't understand. And I want the listeners to understand. Right now, if I myself, who am an American citizen, but I do look Latina, I'm Mexican by heritage and very proud, if I go to Texas anyone in Texas, no matter where you go, Austin, Dallas, whatever little town that is, any police officer right now can just tell me, Estella, do you have documentation, and can you show it to us? And if I don't show it to them, they can take me in to question me. Yes,
wow.
That is 2017. You know, I thought slavery days were over. I thought, you know, the days of you know, checking people for whatever reasons, that should not be. And the reason I'm saying this is because we have to protect our civil rights. And yes,
that's right.
I do believe in criminals should be behind bars wholeheartedly, whether they're documented or undocumented. And I serve on Chief of Police Committee, and I had a conversation with the Chief of Police in El Cajon, and I said, Chief, we can agree to say, yes, all criminals need to be behind bars. But does that mean that they have to work with ICE to come and deport people? Well, no, that means that criminals have to be deported. Yes, I believe in that wholeheartedly. So getting back to your question, April, yes, I believe all criminals, whether they're from Mexico or Timbuktu, they should be deported because we do not accept criminal activity. We should not have them not be accountable for any criminal activity. So getting back to Sanctuary City, yes, Sanctuary State would mean to provide more flexibility for law enforcement in this sense, April, in the sense that it would protect our communities, because a lot of our communities right now that are undocumented do not want to report any crimes, for example, domestic violence, for example, any criminal activity that occurs in our communities right now, they will not report it to the police officer. I just had an incident last week where someone came in here and said their little 7-year-old boy was threatened by someone in their residence, that he had a gun and he would use it on this little boy. And
wow.
why did this family not report it? Because they were undocumented and they were afraid that the ICE would come out to their home, and not just to their home, to their entire mobile home park, because everyone there is undocumented. So the fear factor is very important. This is my message. Our communities are living in fear. This is not acceptable to me, to our Constitution believes in, liberty for all. Remember, the Constitution, we the people, for all people.
Right.
And yes,
right.
They don't have documentation. Right. And yes, they're not able to be here on a you know, permanent visa or permanent residence. But what people don't know, and listeners that don't know this, for every one person that is here undocumented, there's like millions of visas and documentation that is not available. And why? Because the demand is higher than what we have in our U.S. courts right now.
And it's not even necessarily that. You know, a lot of times, too, you don't need papers to act a fool. People just just show up to show out regardless. So it's not necessarily because someone is not familiar with the landscape and they have not assimilated or acculturated to the American way. It's just the way that it is. Mentoring youth, I know that is a challenge too, because you're facing a whole different dynamic here. You're working with millennials who have a whole different mind subset than the one that I'm used to, so I'm trying to conform and learn the language. But also they're dealing with this extra layer of them being first-generation Americans or born here, and their fear for their families being deported, their mothers and their fathers. I know that you work with a lot of young groups, young individuals in groups. Can you tell me a little bit about how mentoring them has been a challenge and some of the successes?
Yes, thank you, April. And immigration has been, as I mentioned, the national platform and the rhetoric, not just on a national scale, but in our local communities as well. We mentor youth that have families from both, families that are legally documented, were born in the United States, and siblings that were not born here, or a parent that is a citizen and a parent that is not. And you cannot imagine the trauma that this brings to a child, having their families torn apart, having to face that, you know, mother or father may not come home, or their family is going to be torn with the system. We have this fear incredibly growing rapidly, and this is why it's so important to speak about it, to talk about it. Our mentoring groups, we speak about immigration. In fact, today I'm going to the charter school here in El Cajon, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. And last week, they wanted to talk about immigration. They didn't know what a dreamer was. And today, our topic is about dreamers. And for our listeners out there, dreamers are a national movement now of millennials, millennials that have big dreams, millennials that are going to Harvard, millennials that are leaders in our community, but they're only missing a document that they don't eat, that they would like, they would even have a roadway to a legal way if there was a legal way. But unfortunately, these millennials and these dreamers, they came here when they were maybe a year old, 2 years old. They don't even know what Mexico looks like, but they live in a fearful community, knowing that they could be deported. And now with the rhetoric going on, we don't even know if the DREAM Act is going to be respected. And with this number 45 president, we don't even know what fate the dreamers will have. So it's a very important conversation with our youth, in this case, our 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, because everyone out there, even new listeners, listeners, brains, you know someone that is here and is working hard to make, you know, their families safe with a wage and good quality of life, and that's all they want. All they want is a good quality of life for their families, for their children, and unfortunately, it affects our students. It's been a very motivating experience with these millennials and these students, because they speak about the traumatic experiences and how it inspires them that they're going to be lawyers, that they're going to be immigration attorneys, that they're going to be leaders in their communities. And some of them already are leaders in their communities.
And I had an opportunity to come and speak to one of your groups at Lincoln High School, and it was just a phenomenal group of young brains, and they were, you know, having a very engaging conversation. And what I told them is, too, you know what? Sometimes we're too reliant on the third party. Sometimes we have to be at home, and I mean this in a respectful way, brains. I want you to look at this, the big picture. But also take that and make our own country great. Make us strong where we are. Work on the policies, work on the procedures, work on the corruption, work on the health care, whatever the situation or dynamics may be in your country, to make it great as well. Because, you know, the United States is not off and popping right now. I mean, people are looking at us and they're scratching their heads. They're trying to figure out what in the world is going on. It appears that we're regressing back 50 years. And it's very unfortunate that we're still having this conversation around race. You know, we got to go beyond the color of the skin and look at the content of the heart and the information in the brain, because it, you know, all of us are not going to look alike. It would be a horrible thing if we were all mechanical animals and we all looked alike, talked alike, spoke alike, ate the same food. There's no diversity. Diversity is rich. It's multi-layered. It's many colors. It's many flavors. It's many smells. It's a big thing. So, with that, brains, please listen to what Estella has said to you. Open your hearts, open your minds, get out, be sure that you vote. If you know of anyone that is having any of these issues with human trafficking, unfair housing, civil rights issues, Estella, would you be kind enough to give us your contact information on how they can be able to use you as a starting point to get more information on how they can address some of these issues? Can you share that with our brains?
Absolutely. Thank you, April. 1-800, we have an 800 number, 1-800-954-0441, 1-800-954-0441, and we have a website, www.c4fa.org, and like April mentioned, we address human trafficking, we address fair housing, we have a youth mentorship program, and we're all in this together, everyone. We're all in this
together.
That's right. We have a fight for equity in the system with a vested interest in white supremacy, and we cannot go back. We cannot go back to the years of discrimination, the years, and I'm going to say it, listeners, the years of lynching. They lynch Mexicans, too, in many states. Like I mentioned, we have a lot in common that in differences, and we're not here to say, you know, there isn't issues that have been that cannot be resolved. We're here to say we can resolve them, but how do we do it? We need to connect. We need to engage. And as April mentioned, civic engagement is very important. Right now, here in El Cajon, in East County of San Diego, we have a civic engagement issue, which is called redistricting. And we have a coalition that is made up of black and brown and all colors of the rainbow, pink, purple, white. We have a coalition that successfully we are working
together.
There's
also a large Chaldean. You know, we don't want to negate them, that a lot of immigrants have had to settle in El Cajon. Isn't that correct? From the resettlement?
Yes.
Yes, and so that's
thank
a large
you.
Popularity, you know, that's a large population, too, that is underserved and overlooked. It's hard for them to learn the language, to learn to drive the cars, the cultural differences. You know, a lot of women don't even drive in a lot of the countries. A lot of them are of Muslim descent. So there's a lot of going on, too. And they're also brown brains.
Yes, thank you. No, that's a very important point, April. Here is the bed. In fact, it's the number one city from what I've learned from statistics of refugees from Iraq, from Syria. We have it here, and I just told City Council last week, I said, look at the audience. This is what El Cajon looks like now. It's a diverse community. It's a rich community. You know, we have to remember immigrants are America, refugees now. We have every culture. It's a beautiful mix of a soup, I like to mention. I think, April, you said it very well. We have to learn, and a lot of the conversation that's left out is just engaging in a conversation with your neighbor, just knowing
right.
that neighbor, because a lot of this fear is not knowing your neighbor, not
right.
talking to your neighbor and sharing. And once you do, we've had conversations with our Chaldean brothers and sisters, with our Muslims. There's a lot of culture here. There's a lot of rich similarities with all of us. We share our families, we share our religion, we share our food together, we share our music, okay? Everybody can relate
exactly.
to music, right?
Exactly. It's really one
here.
Love, and people just really have not gravitated to that yet, and they just, I don't know what it is, they're fighting the power, they're resisting it, they're angry, but we're not angry on the edge, brains, are we? No, we are not.
No.
We are one
no.
love, and we are about to get it in, and be forward thinking and be progressive. We love one another. We want you to be strong. We want you to keep coming back to the edge for more edgy conversations, to learn about what's going on in the community and the world around you. You can follow me on the World Wide Web at agoodperson.biz. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at April's on the Edge. Or you can have a conversation with me on Facebook at A Good Person Productions. But until we meet again, I want you to be good to yourself. Thank you so much for coming on the Edge and talking with us today, Estella. Your words have penetrated my heart, and I know that they've saturated in many minds. And we're going to pick up the gauntlet, and we're going to do something, be it write a check, march, or just get to know our neighbor. Okay?
Thank you.
Thanks
and
so much
you said
for coming
a very
on the show.
Important word. A very important word, listeners, and thank you, April. Love, L-O-V-E, that's all it takes. Thank you, April.
All right. Be well, brains.